Hello, my friends out there. On this Monday, October the 28th, 2019, this is Dan in Little Saigon. And we have a special guest today for the Little Saigon Report. He is a listener. His name is AJ, and he lives in Florida. I would classify him as a maker. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, there are lots of people out there who play video games all day, and I don't know, maybe they do other things, but there are people who in their spare time outside of work build things, create things. Artistic types, you name it. I don't know what the categories are, but the point is, he's one of those folks who is very industrious, very intelligent, I think has the sort of basic understanding of mechanical engineering, and I think we're going to have a good conversation. The topic today has to do with relatively low-tech approaches to storing energy. And as preface to this, I'd like you to think about the dam, the hydroelectric dam. The hydroelectric dam essentially stores potential energy. It's a big reservoir, right? You have a big reservoir, you block off a river, or you block off a lake, or you so you can raise the level of the lake. The point is, you build yourself an artificial lake, and that artificial lake becomes a store of energy. That's potential energy. But when you turn on the turbines, when you open up the gates, and the water flows through the turbines, that potential energy becomes work. And work is something you can use. You can use work to do lots of things. You can use work to run a cam. A cam is a little piston that pops up and down. Boy, oh boy, cams are very useful. The point is, you can do all sorts of things with work. Now I want to let AJ talk a little bit about himself. Go ahead, AJ.
Good morning, Dan. First of all, thank you for having me on the Little Saigon Report. It is quite an honor. I stumbled upon your fantastic work about 8 months ago on the best place to find the Little Saigon Report links, Zero Hedge message board comment section. I don't know what it was. I had not a tendency to click on random links from strangers, but something about the caption and your witty comment underneath it made me click through, and I was very thankful I did, because I stumbled upon someone I look at as a polymath, and that is a person with the ability to go through the world and decipher what is and what isn't, and able to use their engineering mind, whether it be from a social engineering or mechanical engineering, to dissect the world and give a unique opinion of the state of any given topic. So it's been an absolute pleasure to listen to all of your work. I'll go through the backlog of the archives, and it just getting to know you. I feel like a kindred spirit, even though we've never met each other in person, talk on the phone once, but overall, getting to know you just through your work, because you don't hold anything back. It's the authentic Dan, the Dan that is on the podcast, the Dan I'm speaking to right now, is the same person. And it's a no-holds-bar from the heart, with with intelligent backstopping everything he's saying. So everything you're saying, I'm speaking to the listeners right now, everything he says, because it allows you to see the world through a different paradigm. And we don't know what's going to happen 2 days from now, 2 months from now, but the times are changing. So it's good to be ahead of the curve and know what might be coming at you. And that's another reason I like to listen to the Little Saigon Report. So about my background, I was a math teacher and physics teacher. I taught calculus and physics for 10 years, but what happened was the Common Core started to creep its way up into the higher levels of high school math, and to the point where I just couldn't take the control cult any longer, and felt like I was working at a communist indoctrination camp, which I'm sure many of the listeners are familiar with the education system in its current state. So in January of 2019, I quit teaching and decided to just go off on my own, and I just wanted to learn everything about engineering. That's what I would have been if I could do it all over again, but you just don't know when you're 18 and trying to figure things out. So with the help of YouTube videos, you know, I'm learning how to weld, do metal smelting, which is my favorite thing to do. If anyone's ever seen copper molten, there's something magical about it. And it does not do it justice to a video of it. You've done it yourself. It's a very hot temperature, but there's magnetic swirl lines that are just so amazing and a symbol of divinity for me. Many of them about nature, that it's my favorite thing to do is to smelt metal and then try to do something artistic with it or practical. That's where the welding is very useful, because steel is incredibly cheap. So if you're able to get your hands on some, a little stick welder, you can do a lot for practically free, because the welder is $150 and then you can find scrap steel anywhere. So it's a very low cost hobby, but it's practical, and that's why I like it, especially with these upcoming times. The great discontinuity, which very aptly described by our host, is coming at some way, or it's already here, but we're transitioning through it. So as a child, I felt helpless, and one of the reasons I like to learn these skills is because it allows me to enable myself to feel more prepared for whatever comes my way. So that's where I'm at right now, and that's it for me, man. Thank you.
Well, I mean, that's pretty cool. And the thing is, I would think with the background in mathematics and physics that would dovetail pretty well with digging into engineering problems.
It does. It's helpful to have that mindset. I will tell you, a lot of the curriculum, not that we want to get into this right now, but it's all about just being able to not understand why things are happening, but just do the problem and get it done. It has no practical application to the outside world. So I was shocked going through some of the YouTube videos. Wow, this stuff is so important, and it's interesting. Why aren't they teaching it in chemistry? Why aren't they doing more labs that allow them to explore these concepts, and they don't do it? And it's another reason I left. Just it felt like I was not being of use to the students for their greater good in their lives, but it was a good way to go about moving out of it, to then use those skills to allow me to transition into these other worlds, which I really enjoy doing and learning things all the time.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question, or at least I'm going to ask a question at a high level before we dig too deep. And before I do that, I want to preface this a little bit more. So you guys know, folks, I'm experimenting with different ways to do interviews, and currently we're conducting this interview using my mobile phone. And some of you might think, well, Dan, that sounds really low tech. Why are you doing this? Well, here's the deal. I could use Discord or Skype, and in the future I might. But the fact is, there are a lot of people I might talk to, and their mobile phone might be more likely to function in those situations than their computer. It's just I seem to have a lot of people who listen who live these kind of disconnected lives. That being said, I think it's going pretty well, so that's good news. And here's the other thing as preface before we continue. I talk about the great discontinuity, as AJ mentioned, but I also mentioned, and I call it that for a reason, and AJ is well aware because of his background in mathematics, I don't know what's coming for sure. I don't know. I don't think AJ would claim he knows. I think that there are a lot of possible futures at this point. It's like, you know, the way you described the copper just now, that swirling magic, it's kind of like history right now, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, that's a great analogy. And one reason I enjoy listening to your work is because you're looking around other corners. Nothing, of course, remotely close to the mainstream, but allowing you to consider, okay, you know, if this did happen, how would I react to it? And sort of going through your mind to different scenarios, because I do have a family. I have two young kids, and I want them to thrive in this world and be able to adapt to anything that comes that gets thrown at them. So on another note, I'm setting up a little water distillation thing. I'm not a crazy prepper. I don't have a bunch of guns or anything, but I just want to be prepared, because as you so adequately put in my favorite episode 155, Seattle is lying, food, water, and shelter are not negotiable items for anybody. And it is ridiculous the way they've been turned into commodities and traded like the housing, and it boils my blood. So I appreciate that there's someone else out there that feels the same way and can articulate it with such venom when appropriate.
Yeah, and I do get venomous. I mean, that I'll admit to that. I'll admit to it. So at a high level, AJ, is it fair to say that a lot of the battery storage technologies, even the ones that are really cool, like I'm really interested in something called microcapacitance. Have you heard of microcapacitance batteries? Okay, it's a cool concept because you know how, you know, you taught physics and you have a background, you're a maker, you know how capacitors work. Capacitors charge quickly, isn't that true?
Yes, they do.
Now, that can be dangerous too, but...
It can, yeah.
It can be dangerous. I knew a physics guy when I was in school, and he had this idea of stealing these big capacitors from the physics lab and building basically a backpack with a battery and a little glove. And this guy was weird, okay? He'd have a glove with the anode and the cathode, you know, bare on the glove. And instead of it being one of those little shocky things, like, hey, isn't that fun? It basically would blow your arm off. Like, you know, you get that handshake? Yeah, you'd be closing the gap.
Wow.
I know. But he never did it. This was like... He never did it. He never did it.
No. Oh, okay. Oh, I...
But he talked about it.
Well, he could have had a system for, like, grounding him. That's why I thought you were going at first.
No. The idea was to close... The glove itself acts as an insulator. And outside the glove is the positive and the negative contacts without a junction. And when you shake someone's hand with the magical glove that has, I don't know, let's say 10 kilowatts or whatever energy stored in the capacitor, basically it wouldn't even burn. It would just probably blow your hand off, according to him. It'd be so much discharge.
Yeah,
so fast.
It's like he had his idea was like a rolling
bolt of lightning
fence that he could, they used to keep the horses in. It works on the same premise, except that with the capacitor. Now, one of the issues with capacitors that I found is that leakage that you get over time that you don't have with the battery.
Exactly.
Although batteries have their own other issues. So that's why I haven't done too much work with capacitors, because I want, here's where I'm at. If I can just say, I've got 3 kilowatts of solar panels on my house, and I am proud to say I didn't install them myself, and they work magnificently. The issue is, I don't have them all tied in yet, so they're not being optimized to their highest potential. I'm losing a lot. So I bought, I would say, 6 or 8 deep cycle marine batteries, and they're heavy, and the sulfuric acid starts to stink in your garage after a while, and it just, if I ever had to move somewhere in a hurry, I can't imagine myself trying to get all those batteries loaded up. So they work, and they hold the charge, unlike the capacitor issue, but they're a little expensive, and they just don't seem like the most efficient source. So what I've been working on is a hydrogen gas system to generate it with the good old HHO, brown gas, one of the third hottest gas out there that burns, and capturing it in a tank. But I'm performing the electrolysis, because at the negative side you get hydrogen, at the positive end you get oxygen, and then you forms that HHO, they call it, or brown gas.
So you're using electrolysis. If I can interrupt you for a second.
Yes, sir.
You're essentially taking the electricity from the solar panels. You're using that electricity to break down water, and then you're going to store the hydrogen.
Yes, because it would be potable, because it's a lot lighter to do that than have all those batteries around. But then I still have an issue of converting that either by a heat engine, like perhaps like a Stirling, something like that. Are you familiar with Stirling engines? Have you?
I am. I mean, Stirling engines are interesting because they're a relatively simple engine. They're really just based upon thermal energy and air. So you heat up air. As you all know, it's like popping air. So you heat up the air pops, it pushes the piston. So they're very simple, and all they need is thermal energy. And air, obviously.
Those, if you want to go on Amazon or something, they're even a little model is very expensive. So it would be something to look at designing our own one. That would be pretty cool. That would not have so many intricate that we could put together
But can I ask you a question before we go, before we go deep about this? Because this is where, you know, I got to put up a brick wall, AJ, and I got to say something. If we're really honest with ourselves, if things get really bad, aren't we still talking about technologies that will be difficult to maintain?
That's where I'm at, Dan.
Well, here's the thing. This is where I want to transition. I'm sorry for interrupting you, but this is where I want to transition. AJ and I, so I can let you guys know, AJ and I were talking on the phone a week ago about this idea of low-tech ways to store energy. So for the next, for the rest of the podcast, and frankly, I think we'll easily fill up the time, we're going to do a back and forth about this. And the idea is that you treat the concept of a dam, and this is only one example, you treat the concept of a dam as an abstraction, okay? A dam essentially being hydroelectric storage of energy in a big lake. And so AJ, starting there, what are your thoughts on this generally? And then if you were to go about building something like this, and again, you know, I looked up some of the charts on like, you know, 1G of gravity, distance from, you know, the surface, stuff like that. There's a lot of calculators and charts that will tell you how much potential energy is in so much mass at so much of a distance above the ground. So there's ways of calculating this. But my question for you, AJ, is what do you think of the notion of the abstract dam that doesn't use water? Because a lot of places, water could be at a premium. What do you think?
Yes, I think it's a good idea to have an array of options because you don't know what you're going to have and where you're going to be, and you do want it to be low-tech and reliable. So the idea of an abstract dam, if you look at the history of Niagara Falls or the Hoover Dam, I've read statistics that about the Hoover Dam powering the entire state of Nevada, and it's a very great way to channel that water and have it stored there as a potential. Of course, you and I do not have access, right, to the Hoover Dam. So keeping with the theme of a potential, well, the potential doesn't have to be captured in the form of water. It could be in the form of weight. And that weight, when lifted, that's creating a charge. That's, you're getting a potential because it's coming off the ground. And then when it's dropped, if it was hooked up to a pulley system, that pulley system using bearings or cams would be hooked up to a generator, an electric generator, like a DC motor. And if the listeners aren't aware of it, and I wasn't aware of it until I started digging into this stuff a year or two ago and breaking everything apart that I could get my hands on, all of your appliances, except for the internal combustion engine found in your car, are going to have a ton of copper in them. Why? Because copper, it creates an inductance when a magnetic field is introduced to it, and that is what is used in different configurations to generate power. You could use this copper in the generator motor when the weight comes down. When that weight comes down, it could pull on the rotor of the generator, and now you have electricity. So the things to throw around here, Dan, I'll get your take on it, is what would be the most efficient way to capture and efficiently recycle, going through the cycles, of a weight that is falling? Because as it falls, you can absolutely generate energy from it. Of course, you know, just dropping a rock on the ground, it won't do anything, but it's not hooked up to the system. So one idea I had is a hydrogen blimp type system that would go up and down and inflate and then deflate. That might be a bit complicated because, as you did ground me there earlier, Dan, and I appreciate it, we're looking for things that are going to be boots on the ground, practical.
Yeah, but you know what, though? Can I interrupt you for a second?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Oh, absolutely.
I was just thinking about this balloon idea, and in some ways it is kind of low-tech. I mean, part of this, let's, you know, I may be using the wrong terminology, and for that audience, I must apologize. I might be using the wrong terminology. Maybe it's not low-tech that I'm thinking, AJ. Maybe I'm thinking simple, like simple tech. Because in a lot of ways, even the stuff we're talking about at a scale can be considered high tech. It's just not necessarily complicated. It's like the difference between a jet engine and like a piston-driven internal combustion engine. A turbine engine has very few moving parts. So does that make it lower tech or higher tech?
Yeah, that's a great correction. Yeah, simple simplicity is key, because if anyone, if you look at the internal combustion engine, what a nightmare that is with all the timing and the belts and the cams. Oh boy, that's a modern marvel, but you would not want to be trying to fix it.
Well, I mean, here's a true
situation like that.
Yeah.
The turbine's beautiful.
Yeah. Here's a true fact. One of the first steam engines, and I believe the name of the guy was Hero. I think Hero of Alexandria, and I think this was in the first century AD, but I could be wrong, off by 100 years or more. But one of the first steam engines, it wasn't piston. It was like it was basically a spinner, which means a little steam turbine. It's because essentially it was simple, and they had these things. They would open and close doors. I know it sounds crazy, but the little spinner would spin around, and it would open and close doors.
Wow, I have not heard of that. That's very interesting, and it coalesces nicely with something I've been looking at, which is the Lilly impeller. But it was Victor. Oh, it was the levitating guy, Victor. He was. I don't know if he ever got anything to levitate. Doesn't matter. But he was into copying nature's patterns, and he has a spinning spiral.
He was in the vortexes. I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, vortex. Yeah. So I've been really drilling down that because, well, spin we know is great because you're getting your centripetal forces. But what if you compounded that with the vortex? To get both centripetal and central field, get both of them, it would just, it's a really great idea. And, speaking of clean water, I wanted to bring this up to you. I know, tangent, but he had a way with the Lilly impeller to really clean water because it would mix it up. And I actually did do that. I 3D printed a design of a Lilly impeller, put it at the bottom of a steel tank, got it in there, filled it up with water. The vortex it created with a very low spin was absolutely mind-blowing. I mean, it was the real deal. So there's so much out there that it's fun to discuss. But let's get back to the abstract.
Well, so here's what I'm saying about this thing about you and the hydrogen. I kind of like it because the way my mind is thinking, AJ, and this is where I think I kind of got off track in my brain when I was thinking about this originally, it's not about low-tech versus high-tech. It's about difficulty of fabrication. Does that make sense? Like, how hard is it to build something?
And everything I do is through the prism of, can I replicate this on my own with nobody else, no power, no nothing, just me and my tools that I own, that I have. Can I replicate it enough to be sufficient to take care of my family if whatever happens in the great discontinuity? So I love that mindset that we're dialing in on here, and simplicity is only better, like the turbine example.
Well, and this is the thing. It's like, there was a book I read a long time ago, and I think you'd appreciate it. It's technically a history book, but I read it during a medieval history class, and it's called The Medieval Machine by Jean Gimpel. And last name is spelled Gimpel. And in this book, he talks about a lot of the engineering practices of the Middle Ages, and he does discuss the obsession. There was an obsession in the Middle Ages, believe it or not, with perpetual motion machines. Like, they thought they could build these wheels, these water wheels that would spin forever. And that's a lot of nonsense. But there are ways in which you can use things like rotational forces to conserve energy. Don't you think that's a fair statement?
Yes. And the perpetual motion, even though, of course, it's not going to happen in a closed system, if you're able to incorporate some of the outside forces that are abundantly available, well, now, even though, sure, it's not perpetually in motion or whatever, but you're self-sufficient, that's my end goal for everything.
So, for example, you know, let's say you went really crazy with the pulley system, but you use counterweights, like the way, you know, old-style elevators worked. I don't think they work that way anymore, mostly, but they would have counterweights, right, to kind of make the net mass kind of almost, you know, neutral, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Almost, not quite. You could do things like that. You would never get a free lunch from it, but it might be a way of making the system more tolerant. You could even use a pendulum the way, you know, like the old style mechanical clocks. You could even use a pendulum as another way to conserve energy. A pendulum and a cam system where you basically could move a system on some rate. I don't know. I'm kind of going off tangent here. But it seems like there are ways in which this could be done efficiently, so that the idea of taking potential energy and converting it into work the way that a hydroelectric dam does it, it sounds a little weird at first, but really it's basic physics, isn't it?
Yeah, it's when you're looking at what you have in front of you for your options, anytime you can create movement, that can be captured as energy via the generator with the magnetic field passing through the coils. So there are so many options. What we would have to really drill down on is what is going to be most practical in that situation and simple. So when it comes to the abstract, which vis-a-vis creating a battery for storage, because that is the biggest problem with solar. Just before I continue, maybe some listeners are wondering, well, AJ, why don't you just tie into the grid? Well, if I tie into the grid, then you sign away all of your control over your system, and they have the right to shut it all down at any moment.
Yeah.
And I don't want to end up like California. So I just want to interject that real quickly, that this conversation is coming about because the issue is storage, and that's where the abstract dam comes in. Were you going to say something, Dan?
No, I was just saying yeah, because I just was seconding you. Sorry.
Yeah. So, yeah. Oh, yeah. What a nightmare. Can you please? Oh, but side note. So we are thinking about ways to store this energy. So to have a weight that is on a pulley system and you can get real efficient with the counterweights, like the elevator you had brought up, as if it's falling down attached to a cam, it's going to move that bearing. And if you could gear it up in such a way that it's falling slowly, but when you gear down into the generator, it can spin that very fast, or you could just have a larger generator that needs more torque. So many choices there, and it's something worth considering because I have not seen this done at all. So I was very intrigued when you had brought it up to me via email couple weeks back.
I just had a weird idea, okay? Because it deals with your idea of the balloon, but it's not the same, and it's lower tech. And you got to tip, fair enough, you got to tip your hat to your surroundings, because if you live in Florida, and we're that's all we're saying about you, AJ, you live in Florida, for right now, water is not at a shortage. So you got water, right?
Yeah.
Well, and I don't mean clean water. It might not be clean, but there's water. So what if you had a counterweight system? Imagine two wells, okay? Two wells that are dug like 100 feet deep. Each well has a weight in it, like a piston, okay? It can be raised and lowered, right? But they're both counterweights to each other. However, they both have a little bucket at the top. So let's say the last 10% of mass for both these pistons is water. And so each time these pistons drop to a certain level, they let the water go. And maybe that goes into a lower well system. Maybe this is something built above ground level so that when it drops to the bottom, it can fill in a pond. So forget the wells. Imagine you had two towers in Florida. Maybe that's way smarter. I'm going to correct myself. You got two towers. Each one raises a weight. Okay? But the last, let's say, 20% of mass for that piston weight, okay, is water. And that's water that gets pumped up the tower by your solar panels. The excess, a little electric motor running a little pump, just pumps water. So when one of those pistons is at the top, it has to get charged, right? And that's the charging process. But I guess that what I'm saying is this would be a virtually continuous system, and you'd basically be using the differential of mass between the water and the actual piston weight itself when it's dry, and that differential would be the charge differential. Does that make any sense? And so you'd be pumping the water. The pumping of the water would be the transmission of energy. And you'd still be using the mass, potential energy of storage, but you would be using the pumping of the water as a way to store the energy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a really, really brilliant idea. And you could couple with that if you had, say, heat as well, because you create a heat exchange if you needed to. And another way if you wanted to move the water.
Yeah.
Less complicated, but I've done a little bit with heat exchange, and it's fascinating to watch that hot water go and move around without. That's it. That's the only source you can direct it with the way you coil your copper. So yes, I because that way, well, for me in Florida, yeah, I'm not too worried about water because I've got the distillation thing going to where I feel comfortable. Even now, if it were to go to,
but you could have the two could work together. Maybe I mean I'm going to interrupt you because I want to correct myself. Is that okay, AJ?
Yeah, please.
You could have a literal two bucket system. Like your test example, like let's say you wanted to build something like this. You could build two basic towers, like this, like TP type tripods, like two tripod towers, let's say 20 feet off the ground. And then you could have two buckets on a pulley. And really, the buckets could just dump, they're all their mass could be water. And when the bucket's at the top, you pump water in. When the bucket gets to the bottom, it dumps it out, and you get the weight going the other direction. You see what I mean? So essentially, you're always charging. It's a continuous charge system. If one bucket is going down, the other bucket is going up. And potentially, if you time it right, you can start filling. I don't know. This is weird. The idea is this. I don't know if you could have a continuous charge system, but if you built six of those things, like let's say one tower system could keep your house in Florida, you know, at a certain level, and you built six of them so you could be always charging another backup system. Yeah, maybe they would take up a half an acre, right? But that would be a very low-tech energy storage system for a home. And then again, there's no excess weight. It's literally a bucket of water that you're filling at the top of the tower. Does that make sense?
It does. I'd like to ask you a follow-up question to clarify, because we've been using this to store the charge. So in the daytime, the solar is moving the buckets, and you explained that perfectly. It makes sense. But then do you stop it when you have it at the top and wait for when you need the electricity? Or
the idea is that when a bucket is at the top, when a bucket is at the top and it's filled, you would consider the battery fully charged. So in essence, to consider it fully charged, you would have one bucket that is either full or dumped at the bottom, and I think technically it empties out. So when a bucket reaches the bottom, it should fill a trench that goes to a pond. My point is, this could work with your water system too. Like, you'd want a retention pond. If you had the space for a retention pond, you'd want one anyways. I don't care where you are. Don't you think that's a fair statement?
Yeah. Like,
one of the first stages of water purification is having a retention pond, I think. That's stage one. So you'd want one, or maybe a big cistern or something. But the point is, you could have this work with your water system too. The bottom line is this, though. Instead of having it be a weight that just is a weight all the time, in this model, you're using water as mass. And so you're charging essentially when the bucket's at the top and it's empty and you're filling it up. Does that make sense? And then once it's full, again, it unlocks. And all this can be done. I mean, this is all still mechanical engineering. You can design a system, probably a cam-based, mass-based system that would unlock the bucket once it's fully charged, or you could make it manual. Like, you could say, every day I switch systems because, hey, it's the apocalypse and it's my job to switch from one bucket system to the next. I don't know.
Yeah. So you would, just to be clear, I understand that the system, if the timing of, you can do it manually, you can have some device hooked up to it to release it, absolutely. But then, are you going to leave that bucket up there and then when
No,
falls,
once it starts discharging, it slowly, when the bucket is full,
okay.
Discharge is when it slowly goes towards the bottom. So it's like the weight, but instead of like using a weight, we call the bucket full of water the weight, if that makes sense.
Okay, so you'd be banking that for just continual, but they wouldn't run at nighttime though, would they?
It's still weight. I mean, the point is that I may not be describing this correctly. It's still a weight-based battery system. Like, you're still storing it, but it's even closer to the concept of a dam because, in essence, you are still using water as your mass, okay? You're not just using, like, some big lead weight. You're using water, and when the bucket gets to the bottom, you can just have it empty out, okay? And because of the way you balanced it out, I don't know. Honestly, dude, I think it's a question of whether or not a counterweight system gives you more efficiency, and this is where things can get potentially really interesting and more advanced than just potential energy storage. Because the thing is, if you start using things like counterweights and pendulums or even flywheels, you can take that potential energy and you can stretch it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I think that's what I was following up with. That is how you're going to implement the actual. You're describing the storage perfectly, but then once it's up there, how is it going to be then harnessed on demand?
It can be locked up. You can lock it up there if you want to. Like, you could literally have a simple, like, ignore the counter bucket system. Imagine you just have one bucket, okay? And when the bucket is at the top of the tower, okay? And let's just say you have a simple counterweight. The simple counterweight simply pulls the bucket to the top. So let's say you have a bucket and a simple counterweight that is way less than the full mass weight of the bucket. And that simple counterweight, all it does is once the bucket dumps, it pulls the bucket back to the top. Once the bucket is locked, it fills with water. Once it's fully full of water, it's charged, and then you just have to release it, either have an automatic release based upon a mechanical switch, or just do it yourself, like pull a pin and say, okay, we're discharging. Does that make sense?
I got you. I am, when you were describing it in my mind, I was misunderstanding. I thought it was a continual thing. I latched onto the counterweight, which is not a bad idea, but I was thinking it was always going to be rotating. That's what I was trying to out, but I'm with you. Once you get it up there, then it's, hey, that's energy. You're looking,
exactly.
And then whenever you want to plug it back in using the dump, now you're discharging.
Because that's the thing is, if I have water, okay, if you have water, if you're near the ocean, you have water. It may not be potable water, but it's still water. If you have water, if you're near a lake or river, you can use that water to transfer work. And there's lots of ways to do it. It's not just the question of pumping water into a bucket that gets more mass and so more energy. You can also do hydraulics to transfer energy, you know? So the thing is, there's a lot you can do with water. Fair enough?
Yeah, it's very useful in many ways.
But if you're in the desert and water's at a premium, then I think the best option, and maybe we can slide back to this perspective, let's say you're in an arid region and water is at a premium, then why couldn't you dig a well like 100 or 200 feet deep and stick a really heavy lead piston in there? And how would that not be, as long as you gear it right, one of the simplest and coolest batteries you could have?
Yes, you're talking about, three parts? I mean, total, between the pulley, the camera, the motor, and the fifth, four parts. That's a real good way if you didn't have the water, because once that hole's dug, you've got it on the pulley to just bring it up, charged, and then drop it back down when you need it. And you could dig as many holes as you want. They wouldn't have to be 200 feet. It all depend on where you're at and your circumstances, but you could have, it'd be like that Shia LaBeouf movie. Maybe that's what they're trying to do, but you could have that all over the desert.
Well, and here's the thing. If you're in a situation like, you know, where you have to go to scrap yards, maybe a great way to think of this is like, what if you design the piston in the well around your average alternator? Like you literally said, I have alternators. They're everywhere. They're all across the country. Yeah. Even ones that are broken, I know how to fix. What if you instead started with the average alternator and said, how do I make this raise the piston from my solar panels, and then how do I then tap into the discharge as the piston drops?
Oh, that's easy. It's because the alternator...
It goes both, exactly.
So, yeah.
But what I'm saying is, an alternator has a basic amount of, how can I put this? I don't want to call it horsepower, but it can only do so much, right? Any alternator, any electric motor is only so powerful. Is that a fair statement? Like how much...
Oh, yeah, they're all, for whatever purpose they are,
So maybe a great way to build, like if... I don't have the resources to build it and I don't have the property, but if I was going to build something like this, maybe the best way to do it from a perspective of transmitting the knowledge is to say, I'm going to start with the average American most common automotive alternator. And then I'm going to build my piston gravity system around that. And here's my explanation, dude, because if Teotihuacan hits, there's going to be a lot of fucking alternators.
Oh, all over the place. That's one reason I pride myself on being handy with an angle grinder. You can get into anything, and copper's copper. It doesn't go bad. And if it gets soaked, you let it dry out. I mean, generators are, especially some of these DC generators, they are really well built, and they're quite simple. Now, they still have transistors a bit, but for the most part, they're very, very reliable. And as long as you don't allow some sort of nasty acid to get inside the generator, it'll last forever. It's taken care of. So, yeah, I love alternators and generators because they're just a very simple design. They're very practical, and they have long-term shelf life, extremely long.
And frankly, like I said, there can be a lot of cars that run out of gas, but they're still going to have alternators.
Yeah, they are. If you ever gone to one of those pick-and-pull parks, that's going to be day and looking over the entire country. This is my own pick-and-pull. If you're not familiar, it's a local shop down here. It's a junkyard designed created exactly for cars, that you're allowed to go in there with your power tools and pay money to rip out the old parts. That's what you remind me of.
Yeah.
Scouring the country, I'm going to go get that alternator. But that's exactly what I would do, because people don't know how to do anything. They're so useless now because they've been this learned helplessness of the system that the world would be your oyster if you know how to just do these little things. And
So here's how I would Kentucky windage it. And again, I'm not as skilled at this stuff as you are, okay? But here's how I would Kentucky windage it. I would figure out what the most common alternator is, and then I would design a gearing system around maybe 25 to 30% of its max horsepower. And the reason why I'm saying this is because maybe 50%. The point is I would not nearly get to what it's capable of. And then that would be the mass of the weight I would try to raise based upon the gearing. Does that make sense?
That's smart, because you don't want to burn it out, because they have all that wire. If you've ever been inside one that is, if it got skunked from oxidation with caught fire, is that what you're thinking to prevent?
Well, it's also, it's in general, and again, I'm applying some of my negative thinking from software engineering to a discipline where it may not be appropriate. So accept my...
You've been hanging out those H1Bs people too much.
Oh, I don't want to go into it. I don't want to go into it. Or why the planes are falling out of the sky.
I got to have... Oh, yeah, Boeing. Yeah, lots of birthday. Sorry, I know. Certain things I can't help.
No, it's cool, dude. It's cool. But no, it's like... here's my rationale. Tolerances in general can be a very, very sketchy subject, and quality control ain't what it used to be, okay? So, like, if someone said to me, is an alternator in a Toyota Corolla in 2019 the same as an alternator in a Toyota Corolla in 1999? I would say no. I would prefer the alternator from the Corolla in 99 than the one in 2019. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes. If it was taken care of, at least, you know, it doesn't need to be pristine. But yeah, the cliche, I'm afraid, is true about them not making things.
Quality's gone down.
Yeah, sure about that. Yeah.
And the other reason is this, that if you pick a lower tolerance, and it's got to be optimal, so I don't know if 30% is, but if you pick a lower tolerance, you might get more of a life cycle.
No, you would, because you don't run that risk of getting the wires. They have a coating on them, and if that coating gets too hot, it will melt way before the copper, and it'll short out, and the motor won't work anymore. It won't do what you want to, and trying to go inside and fix that by hand on the actual wiring is a nightmare, so you're better to take care of it, and then it will last a very long time.
Yeah, and so this is my thing. Like, I'm thinking, and AJ, don't hold me to this, because my list of shit I should be doing right now versus what I am doing... I don't want to go into that, okay? I'm not a hero of the maker class right now. Other than throwing together a few podcasts here and there, I have really kind of toned down my interest in contributing to civilization the last couple months. That being said, do not hold me to this, but part of me almost wants to do a hobo attempt at doing a white paper, and then or you could do the same, or we could both do it. Like, I could send you my notes. I almost want to build a version of this, not build it, but design it around an average alternator. Like, pick the most common alternator out there and then reverse engineer a gravity piston storage system, tower-based or well-based. Either works. I mean, if I'm in a swamp, I'm probably not going to use a well. On the other hand, whoa, let's think about that one for a second. You want to go to an interesting subject in a second? You want to hear something interesting, AJ? I just thought about, maybe? Imagine you had the well piston, but essentially you were essentially in a place like Florida where you're just inches above sea level. So if you dig anywhere, you end up, the well fills with water, okay?
Yep.
Well, you can actually use the water as another way to change the dynamics of how the piston raises. Like, it's, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's another weird dynamic. Like, all of a sudden, like, oh, you know that hydrogen thing you were talking about?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, if I have, let's say I have a big metal piston that essentially, it's like one of those buoys. You know those big steel buoys off the coast?
Yep.
And
yep.
Essentially, if it's filled with water, and it's just the metal and a little bit of water, it's quite heavy, it'll simply go right to the bottom. But imagine if it fills with a little bit of hydrogen, it starts rising to the top.
Ooh, I see. Oh, and you could use that to help tune in to the RPMs that are perfect for whatever you're kind of generating back on the alternator.
Yeah, I mean, if you had any extra bleed energy, like let's say you use the alternator to raise this piston, but you had extra energy that you could use to create hydrogen, you could pump the extra hydrogen into the big metal bell, and that reduces its mass relative to the water, and that makes raising, recharge, let's call it recharge, that makes recharge potentially easier.
Yeah, and you could just hook up a double set of leads on the same alternator for going up and going down, and then just flip them over. So you would only need one alternator per system
And maybe you
to
just
make it
pump air.
run.
Maybe you wouldn't even pump hydrogen. I don't know. Maybe you would just pump air. I mean, actually, that's really. You know what I'm
It
saying?
depends, like you said earlier, about whether you're in the desert or what are your surroundings. But the basic premise is very simple and efficient. You just got to get the gears down to make sure it's not flailing, going too fast and burning out the motor, like you've already touched upon. So I would love to work on that white paper with you, because I told you, I think I said the other day, start digging a hole, and I have a whole bunch of old alternators to collect them when I find them. I think they're valuable for one, but two, you can melt the copper, push came to shove, and so yeah, we definitely put our heads together and
I
figure
think
this
if you
out.
were gonna do it, you should do it because, like I said, and I haven't lied about this, I've been in kind of a shitty place as far as like motivation goes the last couple months. I just can't lie. But if you had an intention to go do this, I think it would be a pretty cool fucking paper. And actually, if you fucking figured out all the angles, this is something you could probably get published, dude.
Sponsor on the paper. That's a
Well, you could
top
put me, if you put me in a
credit.
footnote, you could make a footnote. Like, the
Oh,
weird
well,
idea
again, come
came to
on, maybe
me.
don't get
You can say.
negative thinking. No, you're gonna be at the top. It's your idea. I'm just gonna
No,
try to
dude,
throw
it's,
down.
and, but you know, it's physics. It's not my idea. It's
Yeah.
basic physics.
Well, no one else has done it, which is surprising
Well, but a
because
lot of
it's.
people. Let's slightly change topics. Don't you think people have a tendency, for really terrible reasons, to want to overcomplicate things these days?
Well, ooh, there's a lot to unpack there because the system, whatever we want to call it, does it on purpose to complicate. So oftentimes the underlings are just a byproduct, in my opinion, of trying to fulfill their overlord's commands. No greater example of that than education, kind of shit with Common Core. So someone might walk in and say, oh, teacher, why are you overcomplicating it? But behind the scenes, the teacher's going to get fired because they don't literally follow the script that their administrator will check on them about and teach to the test, which is a horrible test, not useful, then they're going to get fired. So it's this not a conspiracy, but the system is designed. I look at it as the devil. That's what I just call it. I don't have a better word for it. But it has put, the devil's in the details. I think there's some truth there, that they've overcomplicated our lives, and it manifests as looking like a lot of stupid people. Now, what I really like about you, Dan, is you stop and say, wait, why are we doing it this way? Because as a teacher, I would say this to my colleagues, and they all just, oh, I'm thankful I have a job. Thankful I have a job. And they were just so afraid to speak out or do anything. And if you're just the only one that is making noise, well, out the door you go. So those are my thoughts on the overcomplication of this current
Well, it is
society.
like that, and it's not just, I mean, it's, I, listen, dude, people have suggested in the past, because of my education, that I teach in a public school. You've listened to my podcast. How well do you think I would do in public education?
I'm laughing because you brought this up, I'd say, three podcasts ago. Someone sent in a contribution and you rejected it because they told you to be a public school teacher. And I had this idea in my head of you teaching middle school for one day and going in and doing a full-blown, in the spirit of Seattle's Line, little side-down report for those kids and watching them take in that information, because a couple of them would actually resonate with you and latch on, and the others would run out the door and tell on you, and you'd be gone. But you would, to be fair, you would make a very good a public school teacher or a teacher in general. But take it from me, you don't want to do that. It's a horrible system because you don't get to teach anymore. So in the way you get to you explain things well, you are a master at that. But you have no place because they wouldn't be able to handle Jack Nicholson. So,
Well, Jack Nicholson, which movie, buddy? Which movie? Red Rum?
Yeah, where is it? Which one?
You talking about the one based upon Stephen King's novel, The Shining?
No.
The Shining?
Oh boy, you went a different direction with that one. I was thinking with Tom Cruise and...
Yeah. You Can't Handle the Truth.
Yeah. Oh, no, even better. The Shining. But that's not who you are. You're not No.
I'm not evil, but was he necessarily evil, or was he driven insane and evil?
Oh, there might be more here. yeah, that could be apt.
Here's the thing, dude. I don't want to... Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm just... I really did have that thought the other day. I was laughing at myself, because it would be great to see, but yeah, it would never happen. Please go.
Well, here's the thing. Isn't there a kind of monkey do bullshit to complexity? Like, people assume, because here's the thing, you have a background in mathematics, so you know what complexity is.
Mm-hmm.
And complexity is a measurable thing. It's like the conversation about the difference between a turbine engine and a piston driven engine. One of them has more moving parts, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is more likely to fail because of that. Isn't that a fair statement?
Yes. Yeah.
And the problem is, I think, to some extent, see, this is a strength and a weakness. We're social creatures. We learn from each other. This is a strength and a weakness because we can learn rapidly from each other. But that also means I think we can learn rapidly the wrong things. And the problem is I think a lot of people have grown up in an America where complexity, instead of being a dirty word, has become almost sexy. It's like cryptocurrency. From an algorithmic perspective, the mining of a coin is a deeply complex process. It is nonlinear. It is, by definition, it is advertised as nonlinear. So the last coins you mine are going to be the most expensive. And from any computer science perspective, it seems like they're trying to tell us that complexity has monetary value. And I don't get it.
It doesn't make sense for lots of reasons. But on the Bitcoin, we know, if you're in California right now, how's that working out for you with the whole Bitcoin thing and electricity? Because so it's such a paradox for anyone that wants to believe in that sort of thing. But back to complexity, one of my favorite, I'm thinking of the word, it's not definition, function, that's what I'm looking for. One of my favorite functions is y equals e to the x. Because it is literally its own derivative. The derivative of e to the x is e to the x, and you don't have to know calculus, but the derivative gives you the slope, which is the
same. But what you said is really scary, because if you know basic calculus, it means that basically with e to the x, shit gets crazier at a crazier rate. At a crazy rate.
That's I was thinking that.
I don't always phrase things. Yeah. You know how derivative, like if I have x squared, the first derivative is 2x, and then the third derivative is just 2?
Yeah, it's simpler.
Okay, so it's, but with e to x, it's always bad. It's always really complex.
Oh, I'm a disagree with you, my friend, because the e to the x, it's its own derivative, so it keeps cycling. So unless you have an exponent up there with it, like e to the 2x, but that's either here or there. So what you find is that this pattern shows up in nature, and you can create stuff like the Fibonacci spiral based off that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know you're talking about. Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. And it's amazing and mind-blowing that this, which could be very complicated. You're right about that. That e to the x, it could get messy. But
it spirals out of control.
No, it's not out of control. There's a.
I'm kidding. I'm joking.
Just like in nature. So it's just so beautiful. So why I brought that up was because the life is simple. The best thing, you look at a tree grow. You give it water and sunlight. Hopefully, there's not too much grumble skunk up in the skies, and it grows. Right. So everything that works is simple in nature. It doesn't require all these moving parts. So absolutely, with your overarching proposition that simple is good always, because otherwise you've got to worry about, like, the incidental. I love the internal combustion versus turbine. I hadn't heard that to balance those together and in the paradigm of complexity, it's a hands-down pick. So it's what we'd be looking for in the model for the battery.
Well, here's the thing. If you went about doing the white paper, which I know you can do, and if you went about building this, which I know you could do, you're either going to prove or disprove it if it's useful. And frankly, disproving its usefulness is a useful thing. Isn't that a fair statement?
Yes. That's why when I mentioned I'm surprised no one's done it before, because it's a very good idea. Whether it's practical, well, we'd have to figure that out by getting our hands dirty, which I'm going to do, and then we can report back and let everyone know how it went. But the fact that it hasn't been done at all, just the proof of concept, is a little unsettling. But it goes to what you're saying. Everyone thinks that it has to be complicated, and they have to do what the system is telling them.
Well, it's like learned helplessness, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. They don't want people to be independent. They want them all to be be good workers, but not good thinkers. And that's what the system set up for.
It's like, okay, I have mixed feelings about different kinds of conspiracy theories. As a matter of history, I know conspiracies exist, but that doesn't mean everything's a conspiracy. And every once in a while, I'll hear a story about, well, like my dad. My dad used to tell a story about some dude that ran his car on water. And this was actually during the second oil shock. So I was like 8 years old.
And Stanley like, Meyer, they killed him, Dan.
Well, I know.
Your dad was a genius, okay? I see a lot of parallels between the two of you, just from a third party, and they killed the family. I'm sorry, please continue.
Well, I'm not saying it didn't happen, but here's what I'm going to throw on the table.
Okay.
I think that one of the tensions around energy is exactly what you're getting at when you're talking about this, and that is that there might be a lot of technologies that allow for distributed energy generation and distributed storage, which is the best way. The best way is distributed. It's not consolidated. It's not these giant power fucking facilities. It is where basically everybody can supply their energy if they need to, as much as they need it. And frankly, we would probably save energy if we did that, if you ask. But the problem is, that's empowering. AJ, that's empowering. If people control their source of energy, they control their lives.
They don't want that, and I've heard stories, I could not confirm, I haven't done it myself, but people putting patents in, and they get, not rejected, but they get classified for national security reasons. Of course, they can say anything national security, but these patents deal with something like a Stanley Meyer HHO type engine, and they just disappear into the night because they're considered, a threat to national security. Well, we know what's going on with oil in Syria, we don't want to get into it, but it's clear as day that there's a control that they want to keep everyone tied to the oil pump, because that's a tax that everyone has to pay to get around. And of course they don't want decentralized opportunities to come to fruition, because it takes away one of their chips they have on.
Well, it's a horrible tax, because here's the deal. I don't want to get into things like climate change or global warming, because these are issues that, as a little schmuck, I cannot resolve. But I can tell you this, living in a city, cities would be a lot nicer if we didn't have so many fucking pipes putting toxic smoke into the air.
Yeah, it's funny you mention that, because I've really been meditating on, when you say the a billion Bengal tires, is it 10 billion?
Well, it's a joke about, one day.
I know. I know it's not.
Like a billion Bengal tigers in India. Yeah, as an analogy.
So I know you're joking, but it's a thought experiment. And, so I was at the beach. We have a beach the other night. I was at the beach the other night. I'm going to slow down. And it's a very popular beach with a lot of families. And I went to use the restroom, and it just smelled terrible. Now, here we are on the Atlantic Ocean, beautiful night. The salt water has that own sort of cleaning because of the salt and the chlorine in it. And I walk in the bathroom, and it's just a dumpster fire. And it was shortly after you had mentioned the tires, and it clicked with me that we should not be living, even in a suburb, it's too close, too many people to have together. So, of course, the city, that's sheer insanity, which you're unfortunately living right now, to have that many people compacted with their waste and having to move the resources around, and the centralization of resources, that it creates a really unfortunate situation. Sums up really well with the billion Bengal tigers.
Well, you know, and this is the thing. We're almost at the end of this podcast, so I'd like to leave it with a bigger philosophical conversation. And before we go too far onto that, I just want to say in the future, if you're up to it, AJ, and as long as the audio works out, but I'll get it worked out, I'd like to do more of these because I'd like to do some subjects dealing with alternative, basically reimagining ancient techniques in warfare. Things like, and not just ancient, but like modern examples of things that people ignore, like archery, like, you know, torsion weapons. I mean, we talked about vortexes, but interestingly enough, with respect to vortexes, is this notion of storing energy in twists. That's an interesting subject too. But I wanted to like think about weapons and also black powder. Like, what would a renaissance in like black powder today look at? And if it's already happening, maybe we research it. Because frankly, with what's happening with guns right now, I think we need a renaissance in black powder. I mean, I hate to say it, but it's kind of like they're coming after the guns, so maybe we need to start building cannons. As crazy as it sounds, like build a Parrot gun. What's a Parrot gun? It's a rifled cannon with a big Mini-A ball. Why not start building Parrot guns? Anyways, a topic for another day. But
yeah,
before,
love to have those because I just real quick, I love charcoal. You know, it has the hottest melting point of any of the elements, and that's the main ingredient in black powder. It's so cheap because all you have to do is burn firewood and throw it in a bucket of water, and you singe it, and you can grind it down, and now you have the powder. You have to add some other stuff like stump killer, but then boom. So it's again back. I close with this that we're always looking for what is simple and at hand wherever we are at.
Yeah, I mean, what is simple? What's available? How do we deal with the circumstances we find ourselves in? I mean, I guess maybe that's the way to kind of leave this conversation is that one perspective philosophically that we all need to approach the future with isn't simply flexibility, but we need to throw away this kind of like over-complexification bullshit. Instead of saying, you know, I know how to do this, I know how to do that, maybe we need to learn things and we need to unlearn other things. I don't know. Well, AJ, I want to say something before we go. I want to say thank you for participating today. Been really great talking to you.
Yeah, real quick, I was told Glenda was going to be on the show today. A little about that, but that's okay. Maybe next time.
Oh, what do you want to do?
I love Glenda.
Oh, you mean Glenda's 12. You mean the time-traveling bagel toaster from the year 2087.
Yeah, but Annie recommends the setting as well. Don't forget that. That's important. Yeah, just tell him I said hi. And Dan, it's been an absolute great experience.
You need to know, you opened a door there, AJ. If Glimbus 12 starts thinking about you, that means he's going to start sending tachyon particles into your subconscious.
I'll see him in my dream.
Okay. Well, hey, have a good day today out there in Florida, AJ, and thanks again.
Thank you, Dan. It's been an honor. Thank you. Have a good day.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Beep.